Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of February, recording at 9:50 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here, not just today, but during the week, as this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. And in stock markets, well, the bulls have been very much in control, and January ended on a high, and markets have really been quite firm going into February, and it's an across-the-boards strength. There's no market really being left behind, and some of the previously weakest markets, take European bonds, some of the very depressed European stock markets, Greece, which I mentioned before, had stunning rallies from their January reaction lows. Now, and that strength, as I say, carried through today. We had Asia generally firm. India's really in the driver's seat on this latest rally. More on that in a moment. But China was quite steady. European markets here today also showing they had a little bit of some moderate losses yesterday, but in a mixed session, some moderate losses, but solid gains in here today, including the UK FTSE 100 index up over 5,900 right now. DAX that was up nearly up 1.8%, and Germany DAX up 1.67%. The Americas closed near the highs. The Dow up nearly 157 points. The S&P up 19.36. So it's 1.5%. NASDAQ up a little bit more. These are strong gains. Long-dated government bond prices, which had been steady for most of the week, but they were hit in here today. The U.S. Treasury long bond is down 1.24 seconds. We did have some downward dynamics in these long-dated government bond prices here today, but they were downward dynamics from the range highs. In currencies, the U.S. dollar has generally been soft here as stock markets have rallied, and we've got the Aussie up to 107.71. We've got the euro, where are you, euro, up to 131.58, and sterling up to 158.15. US dollar index down to 78.95. Precious metals, which led by gold, which had been performing very much like a risk asset, but caught a downside key day reversal today. That selling pressure did not spread as widely across the other precious metals. They were down, but palladium just over a dollar, silver down half a dollar. Platinum just down $4.50, but gold, say, gold was down on the close at $33. That takes it down to $17.26.25, and as I say, that's downside key day reversal. More on that in a few moments, obviously. Soft commodities, they've tended to be ranging, some of them soft. Coffee's been quite weak, cocoa's been quite weak. The rough rice is obviously hugely important in Asia. That had fallen sharply this week before steadying here today. But soybeans, which had a big downward dynamic on Monday, has rallied the last 4 days, and so more than offset that. But range bound there. And I just want to see the CCI index, because that is important, and that's steady, but it still hasn't broken its progression of lower rally highs. Now, what is very important in these markets is the strength of crude oil. And there are more articles appearing on Bloomberg and elsewhere saying that the Israelis want to go in with a major strike against Iran's nuclear installations over the next few months. These have been pretty persistent, and that has helped to keep the Brent crude quite firm, and it surged today. It was up $2.50, so it's up to 114 and 50 cents. And the WTI has been weaker, but it was up $1.40 in here today. It's currently trading at 97 and 77 cents, so just below 98. Natural gas has not participated. That's up. That's down actually today. It's at $2.50. And that's pretty much it. Okay. So what's going on here overall? Well, in terms of stock markets, I mean, really, the year could hardly have had a better start. So we've seen terrific gains. Now, a lot of that has occurred. It goes back to December when the ECB suddenly made huge amounts of money available to the entire European banking sector. Now, if we think about that for a moment, there has been such widespread talk, or had been such widespread talk about European banks going bust. And that has continued. People were talking about various Lehman moments occurring in the banks. And, well, we had the ECB come in with a huge tranche of capital, over half a billion euros, which was being lent to the banking sector, the commercial banking sector, at 1% interest rates. And then they've been able to either deposit that money with the ECB, but increasingly they've been buying some of these debt issues, and not least Spanish and Italian long-dated government bonds, and it's been pushing yields down. Those yields have continued to fall, which is very positive. And therefore, the ECB, as I mentioned before, has been recapitalizing its banking sector through the yield curve. Now, the banks, European Banks Index, which we've often flagged as one that just had to be watched, it was very important, and it was really a litmus test in terms of risks. Well, that looks like it's going to break up out of its current range, and really you go back 3 weeks, and it was 3 or 4 weeks, and it was right down testing the lower side of that range. And you think, well, how can that be? How can this rally up so sharply? Well, there'd be some short covering, but also there's bargain hunting in the sector, because if you're running a big bank and you've got a lot of dodgy loans on your books, but suddenly you have a benefactor who's allowing unlimited borrowing to take place, and then you can go and invest that money on a very low-risk basis because the ECB is also supporting these troubled sovereign debtors. So shades of the Fed here. And the difference is big. They started buying those Italian bonds at 7%, those 10-year Italian bonds, or getting 3, 4, 5 on the shorter term denominations, and at a cost of only 1%. And I described it as a bit of a Ponzi scheme because they can then take those purchases back to the ECB and use them as collateral to buy more money. But unlike Madoff's and other private sector Ponzi schemes, these don't have to worry about a sudden increase in redemptions relative to cash because the ECB is just creating the money for this. So that doesn't solve the problems of dodgy debt, but it buys a lot of space. It creates some earnings as opposed to losses for these banks, and the main thing is, I don't like the term is kicking the can down the road. It's more than that because it's buying a lot of time. It is creating some profits, and it also opens the door to the European Union getting what it needs most of all, which is a little bit of growth somewhere in the not too distant future. Well, that's not going to happen overnight. But you can see how the Fed's policies have helped the U.S. economy to generate a little bit of growth, and that's even starting to happen now in the UK. So you take that and a realization that Greece, again, people are talking about Greece on a daily basis, but everybody knows that there's going to be another haircut on Greek borrowing, and it's only a question, what seems almost academic, as to whether it's 70% or 80%. And there's going to be a haircut on the Portuguese debt, almost inevitably, given the yields that are now shown. But people know this, and it is contained, it is orderly. And again, you remember at year end, people were talking about a collapse of the European banks and a collapse of the entire euro, and saying that this was going to be a nuclear version of what had happened in 2008. We even had George Soros issuing plenty of warnings about that. It's never been Fuller Money's view, and it's not today. And they are buying some muddle through time in here, and potentially quite a bit of muddle through time. So against that background, with such pessimism in the markets, lots of shorts in the markets, well, they've been squeezed out on a steady basis, and then we have a genuine momentum move in place, and people are having to, institutions certainly are having to to step in. In a tough analytical environment, you may recall, Fuller Money saying that that was climactic selling activity that we saw in August and September, signifying a region of the probable lows because it was such a big sell-off. Subsequent action, excuse me, showing in which the lows were tested and retested. But held, indicating some stability. And then in October we had the big rally, and subsequently we've had higher reaction lows. And now we've seen gains that even optimists weren't forecasting for some of these indices at the end of December. So what does that mean? Well, it means that our talk about the cyclical bear being over and therefore a cyclical bull beginning, I think all the technical evidence confirms that. There's not much not to like about the technical evidence that we've seen here in these stock markets. But, and there's always a but, they're now overbought. And they're becoming increasingly overbought, because this is a genuine momentum move, and I have said over the last couple of months, particularly when people were so pessimistic, I said in my view the odds of a melt-up were greater than a meltdown. Melt-ups are slower than the meltdowns, because meltdowns are panics, but the melt-ups are significant, and they're persistent. I think also that high-frequency logarithmic trading has a lot to do with some of this volatility, and we're seeing the plus side of it all. Now, that's enough on Europe. The Bernanke's QE continues, and the Asian markets, well, it's broader than Asia. take the growth markets generally, which people still describe with what I regard as a misnomer, calling them emerging markets, But Brazil's recovery has been stunning here, and most of these Central and South American markets have seen significant recoveries. Eastern European stock markets, that was certainly a troubled zone. We had some massive bear markets there. They've seen very significant rallies in the last couple of months. So, as I say, not much not to like, except that we are overbought here in the short term, and that will spill over into a correction phase. And we'll wake up one day and we'll see some sharp downward dynamics, and then we'll get some follow through. There are risks. There are always risks. The risks are not in Europe, in my opinion. We over-worried, the world over-worried about that, and they're still going to fret about it a fair amount. But the risk, certainly with some of the headlines, which I mentioned in my introduction here today, is this talk of a strike against Iran. And if that sounds like madness, at least to me, I don't think the Obama administration has anything to. Let me rephrase that. I certainly don't think the Obama administration would want that. I don't think anyone outside of Israel would want that, and I think it's probably pretty controversial within Israel itself. Now, it's hard to judge how much of this is saber rattling. To get the Iranians to back off somewhat, but we've seen that before. I don't think that will work. And how much is genuine? I can certainly sympathize with the Israelis' concern over all this. But the big risk here, and not for the first time, is that we get a spike in crude oil prices. So at 115, this very steady pattern that we see for the Brent crude, it's at 114.5 here right now, but you start to go up another $2, $3, and it's beginning to break up out of this long consolidation or ranging pattern that we've seen, and that would be a concern. You put it up to $10 or more higher, and we've got a problem. And that would certainly, in my opinion, trigger a setback. If we were to get a strike by the Israelis against the Iran installations, I think you would definitely see a spike in the price of crude oil and a very sharp setback in stock markets. So, yes, there are risks out there, but on the other side of the equation, and I've emphasized this point so often, monetary policy generally rules in markets, and monetary policy is hugely accommodative in the West, and it's becoming less restrictive and more accommodative in the growth economies. So that's a powerful tailwind for stock markets. So, watch Brent. And incidentally, the Brent is so much stronger than the WTI, in my opinion, because the U.S. is producing ever-increasing amounts of oil itself, largely through the tapping of all the shale that's occurring in the Bakken region, not least. And that accounts for the widening spread that Owen wrote about and talked about yesterday. Interesting picture here overall. How to play it? Well, I certainly favor being long overall, and I bought a little more. I used more dividend money and bought a bit more of the Shell. I'm on the 9th of January. I mentioned that Shell was overextended relative to its MA, due for a pullback. Well, it has pulled back. It has seen a mean reversion. So I tied up some cash in the accounts that had come in from dividend money. I tied up the rest of the cash using buying a little bit more Shell, which is yielding 4.2%, and talking about raising the dividend. Again, a cyclical bull, Not without risks, but risks are ever present. This has been a great time for Fuller Money Themes here since mid-December, and they took a beating, no bones about it, in the second half of last year, because we had the weak currencies in Asia, and we had the big stock market sell-off, that cyclical bear trend. And really, the currency swings, as Owen was mentioning to me earlier today, has probably been an even bigger factor than what the actual markets have done. But since this rally has progressed, or as this rally has progressed, we've seen big gains in these Asian-led currencies, and previously weak Indian rupee. It's been very strong. Well, they've all been strong in all those Asian currencies. Okay. Now, what about these long-dated government bonds at the higher side of the range? It's not surprising to see a little bit of selling in the bond prices, but all the QE that's taking place, and continuing fears by not an insignificant number of investors, may support this market for a while longer. It's not something that I would be inclined to trade or invest in here at this stage. If you go in and short them, you're fighting the Fed. And if you go in and buy, you're paying for the lowest return that these have seen. It's not a, and it's you're losing money given the relative, or given on real interest rates when you factor in the inflation factor. What about gold? I've described gold as Owen has also. This has been a very impressive rally. Providing a lot of evidence that we had a low down in that low $1,500 region. And we really had two lows down in that region, separated by 3 months. And we've seen a very impressive rally. It's not without some justification, for sure. But it's not been global uncertainty so much. It's been a commonality with the stock market rally. Low interest rates, that's a powerful tailwind for gold prices. And everybody knows who thinks about this that all this money printing that's taking place is going to lower purchasing power. In these currencies, more likely than not. So that's the gold story, but it's on a bit of a stalk when you look at that chart. And the there's a near inevitability that you we get a corrective phase in here. If you contrast. Say, well, gold's moved on commonality basis. It had put in less support building than stock markets before this strong rally. So whereas we've been talking for months about the higher reaction lows that were showing up during the support building process for stock market indices, we haven't had that with gold. It just dropped down to a new reaction low. Just below the low of 3 months earlier, and then it's just moved steadily upwards. And uptrends are usually built on a progression of higher reaction lows. So with a downside key day reversal, you have to say that the odds have swung in favor of a reaction now commencing. But it'll be important to see what happens on Monday. If we get downside follow-through, including on the close, on Monday, not just in the opening, which I would expect as some Asian selling hits it. But if that carries on through the close, I mean, that would indicate that this reaction was underway. And if gold retraces a third to a half of its gains, that might well create another entry point for those who would like to top up their gold positions. We will see, but in the short term, the risks are now to the downside. But as we've said on so many occasions, we see no evidence at Fuller Money that this whole cyclical bull market is over. It's been tough to work with because it's deviated considerably from what had been that incredibly consistent pattern that we had seen overall. In other words, it moved in August with that big big run. That was early. It was a little ahead of schedule. That wasn't all that big a deal, but then it accelerated sufficiently to cause a medium-term correction in what is normally a red-hot period, fourth quarter and first quarter of the new year, for gold bullion. And but I think we'll, as I say, we'll see a reaction. There's resistance up in the $1,800 region from former highs. This reaction and pullback, but then I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see that level tested and possibly exceeded before the end of March. We'll see. The industrial metals have shown a clear support building. We've mentioned that a number of times. A number of them are still quite cheap. They're being led to the upside by copper. Had a good day in here today, up 12 cents to 390. So that looks like a number of the stock market indices. The other industrial metals are lagging behind, but as I emphasize, still a bit cheap, and the patterns are clearly improving. That's one reason why the mining shares have been on a bit of a roll. So that looks interesting. And in terms of currencies, I've so often mentioned that the U.S. dollar, it has that safe haven appeal. So when, to use the banality, when we're in a risk-off environment, the dollar is strong against pretty well everything. When we're in a risk-on environment, to use the banality, again, as we have been here with stock markets roaring ahead, then gold suffers and the Asian currencies take over, and that looks that indicates an infusion of capital into that region, and it's moved in quickly and quite aggressively. I think that's justified. I think it's interesting. I think that's good for Fuller Money themes. I think this is going to be a good year overall, but it's not going to be a one-way street. And we've probably had the best of the early jam. We have to watch out for that pullback and consolidation, but that will present, in my opinion, another buying opportunity, provided we don't get crude oil going through the roof on political concerns, military concerns. And on that note, folks, all the best. Have a fantastic weekend.